syncope. Who's Demetri?
Wolf.
Yeah, there.
I got it. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Dan and Michael? Is it working? Can you feel it?
Yeah, I do.
I think it is.
It's I'm having a sin flood of syncope, though. Syncope is a great word I learned recently. It's the medical word for fainting. And I my discharge papers from the hospital said that I had a vasovagal, which sounds dirty, vasovagal syncope episode. Just means I blood rushed out of my head and I fainted from coughing. But yeah, man, it's pretty cool.
And one more thing to add to that is the Freedom Fiends and your discharge papers are covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
I don't know. I think that having my discharge paper, my medical records covered BIPCOT would probably be in direct contradiction to the HIPAA privacy codes, which you deal with HIPAA, don't you, Lou? You're a HIPAA guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hip.
Yeah, I'm hip too. You know, the Fiends, Freedom Fiends are, we're kind of something for all ages. We are the Freedom Fiends. We're the hip meet the hip replacement.
This is a teaching hospice.
It is. It's teaching hospital or hospice. Nick called it a learning hospital. I meant to correct him on that the other day, but I guess that works too. You know, most TV shows that take place in a hospital, and there's been like 50 of them in the past 50 years, they always take place at a teaching hospital. Did you know that?
Yeah. Oh, Scrubs did, didn't it?
Yeah, Scrubs, ER, General Hospital, House, Bones. No, not Bones. No, Grey's Anatomy. Marcus Welby, MD. No, I think he's a private. I think he's the last one that wasn't a teaching hospital. But the reason is because teaching hospital, they get to have like the old, quirky, weird doctors that are addicted to morphine and yell at everybody but solve the things no one else can solve. But then they also get to have like the young hotties that like mess everything up and just look cute, you know?
I only watched the first series of House, but like I kind of got bored of it because it just seemed like the same thing in every episode.
Same thing. I like it. I'm rewatching it, but there's a website where doctors like disassemble that show. It's pretty funny, and one of the main complaints is that almost every patient on there at some point during the show, and usually at the same minute mark during the show, has a heart attack. Like, no matter what they're in there for, it's like they need that for the drama, you know? And it's not always like that. But yeah, doctors like that show, though. It's entertaining. They all want to be as cool as House. He's pretty cool. But
I wonder if there's as many rare diseases as they find on that show.
That's it's kind of like you watch CSI New York and like they're always investigating crimes that like, you know, where guys are leaving clues and they're like deep serial killers with brilliant minds. And it's like, no, man, 99% of what the murder police in New York do is just solve like one junkie hitting the other over the head with a baseball bat or a brick, you know. There's not that many special crimes, but I guess in a city like New York or in an area like, you know, New Jersey, there would be. And if there was a team that only dealt with the weird ones, they probably would only do. I mean, they have like one case, those five doctors have one case a week, you know, so maybe.
Yeah, I don't really know. That's kind of silly.
You know what I want? Today, my wife went to the store and came back, and then it was like something we forgot. It was like we just wanted one thing, and I was thinking like, and she's like, "Oh, I don't want to go back." So, but she went back, and I was thinking like, wouldn't it be great to have like a little drone that would go to the store for you, and you could just like tape money and a note to it, like the way people used to send their kids to the store for cigarettes. And you just send your drone.
Surely you wouldn't need to take money. I mean, if we're sending drones down for us, I mean, surely we could Bitcoin. Pay some way out of that. Yeah,
yeah. I know, but I like the idea of some money and then like pinning into it. It'd be the greatest thing since sliced cops, man. I tell you,
you're just trying to relive your childhood.
I never sliced a cop.
No, I'm talking about getting the note to go buy cigarettes.
My parents didn't smoke. They didn't send me to the store. I spent it all on candy. They did. Couldn't be trusted. I wasn't criminal. I just really liked, I was like impulse driven. Yeah.
Okay. Like my mom used to send me to the party store to get cigarettes. And this is when I was like way too young to even consider start smoking. Yeah. And that's what they call them here.
I don't know what that is.
They got the beer.
Booze and
they
liquor.
Got the beer chips. Think of it as like a, kind of like a 7-Eleven, but smaller. Less variety of things, fewer items available,
booze and liquor.
Usually really dirty and dingy.
Yeah, booze and liquor, and then like
beer, soda,
rolling papers,
stuff like that.
Rolling papers, and then like incense in two flavors, like three flavors, like Black Love, strawberry, and one called Pussy, with a picture of a cat on it.
Yeah, that wasn't really. They didn't have too much of the incense there. It was mostly just beer, wine,
Pussy Cat. I said it. It's cat. It's cat. It's okay. Go on. It's the greatest thing since sliced cops, man, that incense.
No use crying over spilled cops.
Yeah, greatest thing since sliced cops. I don't think people should slice cops. I'm amazed, though, that no one's ever said that phrase. And I was thinking we should maybe use it as the name of the show tonight for no good reason. But you don't think we should make buttons that say that. You think we should make buttons that say, Dan, they're bigger buttons. Now explain that for the people that are listening to the Fiends for the first time.
Okay.
Dan and Lou.
Later on in the show, you're going to hear an advertisement for Freedom Fiends buttons, and you should get lots of buttons because buttons save the world. But anyway, on there, Dan's wife is going back and forth with Dan, and now there are new larger buttons, and she exclaims exuberantly, Dan, they're bigger buttons. And for some reason, this is absolutely taken off
in
Fiend fans.
Dan.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm seeing it on the, internet and stuff. You know, I used to see who was John Galt spray painted on the side of the wall. Now I see, Dan, there's bigger buttons. and I'm actually going to grab an episode, slice and dice, and make that my ringtone.
Cool. Dan, when we recorded that, I remember I gave you guys some direction for some of that. What did I tell her? How did I tell her to say that?
Oh, how did you? I can't.
Did I say sound like a crazy woman on Monty Python?
Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah. When you say something, like, Katie acts like that anyway, you don't even need to give her that direction.
I think I said, like, act way too excited or something like that. And she sounds way too excited sometimes, just, you know, exclaiming normal things.
I think actually when we did that show at the end of it, you put the sort of outtake bit on the podcast version because like it took us a while to do it because there was a bit of nonsense that happened.
Yeah, how long did it? What was the outtake? What did it say?
I remember it was just, there was a few of them. It was like she was trying to get it right and then she started going, well, you write that down for me and stuff. And then like she started, and then she did it about four or five times, but it was just funny the way she did it.
What's that background noise? You opening like a creamed egg or something?
Oh, I was looking at a Walmart bag and it had a can of bug spray in it, so I took it off.
I
took it off
the desk. Fiend phone is so good, man. I heard it perfectly. So, greatest things in sliced cops.
Who said that?
I came up with it.
I don't know if I want to touch that.
Yeah, I don't think I do either. Although I'm not saying the name of the episode tonight. I was listening to a Fiends the other day and Chandler was on and he said twice in 10 minutes. The phrase, the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I was like, ugh. I was yelling at the radio. I was like, man, come on. You're a creative guy. You can do better than that. And then I just thought, like, at least say, like, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread. It was a conversation I had with my wall, basically.
Yeah. Now, you know, if you do go around saying stuff like that, then people are going to, like, freak out and be like, oh, my God, Fox News was right. There is a war on police.
No, there's not. Explain why there's not. It's a war on people from the police.
Well, why there's not. If you really want to know who's looking for war, you just look at who's buying the Bearcats, MRAPs, fully automatic weapons, and you know all this lethal weaponry. As a matter of fact, if you want to know who's looking for a war, just find out who weaponized drones to use against citizens. And the first state that did that was North Dakota. But anyway, yeah, there's a meme going around. And it shows Sheriff Clark.
Wasn't North Dakota the first state also that used a drone to find stolen property? Like they solved, it was like some dispute over cattle.
They chased down some alleged cattle rustlers. I'm not really sure, just how truthful their story was. But anyway.
It is? North Carolina or North Dakota. Here's what it is. I think they test those things intentionally in North Dakota because it's about the second or third most we don't trust the government, we all carry guns state after probably Idaho and Wyoming are probably the most we don't trust the government. So they don't want to test that stuff in Wyoming or Idaho, because first of all, everyone here is a good enough shot to skeet shoot with a rifle and take a drone out of the sky. They're probably not that good in North Dakota. But I think it's kind of like if they can get away with it in North Dakota, they can get away with it anywhere. That's what I think they think. And it's such a low population that if they start a little revolt over it, it'd be pretty easy to quell.
Well, yeah, there's six people there, but also
three in Wyoming.
Most of these hardcore patriots, they'll whine and complain, and they'll wave the government's flag at them as they're protesting. But, if the government crosses their line in the sand, they'll just draw another one further back, like they always do.
Yeah.
But anyway, going back to this Sheriff Clark, who's like the anti-Sheriff Mac, I think you described him earlier. Yeah. He's the sheriff in Milwaukee, and he's gotten a lot of acclaim over the past couple of years or so, and he has said some decent things. But anyway, he was on Fox News not too long ago claiming that there's a war on cops. And quite frankly, there's 300 civilians to each cop, so if there was a war on cops, they would know. And there wouldn't be a million cops anymore. But anyway, that's a side note. So anyway, he's on there. There's a war on cops. He's also the scumbag that not too long ago said, look, if you feel your rights are being violated, you should just comply and then sort it out later. Try telling Jews, if you think your rights are being violated, just get on the train, sort it out at the camps. It's definitely a lesser degree, but there's no difference in kind. And then something else that he's famous for is he said that the police can't protect, can't offer the protection that they, advertise and that the state's bootlickers say that they can. So he says, yeah, go out and get a gun and defend yourselves because the cops can't do it. And that's one thing that he got absolutely 100% positively correct. The cops can't defend you. More Freedom Fiends coming up right after this.
Freedom Fiends, the greatest thing since sliced cops.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
For some reason in this country, and in most of the Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Bigger buttons,
and they're bigger buttons.
Maybe that's bigger buttons.
Getting the show.
Yeah, I
like that. Oh, that sounded nice and healthy.
That's me most of the time. I just usually mute it. So I actually wrote a blog post today. It's on the feed site. It's got audio. It's got me calling into Free Talk Live. It's called "Info on How Vaping Nicotine Harmed Me," and it's. It's 10 minutes of audio and then a couple blog posts, and it's a lot of good information for anyone that thinks that vaping is completely safe. And again, I'm not trying to like outlaw it or anything. I think it should be sold in vending machines to children along with heroin and, you know, assault rifles, but it's all good. So I want to talk about, speaking of rifles, can you shoot dogs that come in your yard to eat cats in Texas? That's what one reader asks, one listener. I don't know if he wants to be named because he's talking about the law and what he can do. So it's a guy who has some cats. He also helps stray cats and adopts them out to people in his home. And dogs, possibly stray, maybe not, come in his yard and eat the dog, if cats. Kill him. So he's wondering, can he get, you know, first of all, should he get something less lethal, like a pellet gun, CO2 pellet gun? First of all, if you're gonna get, he's got a BB gun or like a pump BB gun or a CO2 pellet gun, I would get of those two the CO2 pellet gun, because BB guns aren't that accurate, and you need to be accurate with something like that. Like, you don't want to hit the cat, you want to hit the dog. And the accuracy skills you'll learn with a more accurate air rifle will transfer to a real gun, whereas the not so much with a BB gun. Do you guys ever have BB guns as kids?
Both BB guns and the pellet guns.
Yeah.
Actually, I had a pellet gun. Like,
speak up, Dan. Turn it up. Speak up. Like on the radio.
I'll pretend I'm on the radio. No, yeah. I had a pellet gun years ago, but like now, they put through that bill here where you have to be licensed to get one now. It's, I know.
You have to be welcome the guy to Scotland. You have to be the guy in Saxondale, a licensed pest control guy. You have to have a reason.
Hey, can you guys have like airsoft or water pistols, or do you need a license for that too?
We're allowed to have water pistols. That one's okay.
Got a permit really sure for that freedom?
You know, really, you could start a revolution and take over any country starting with a homemade slingshot. Really, I mean, you think about it, it's like you can make a slingshot out of, you know, a tree branch and a big rubber band that can shoot a ball bearing or a rock, you know, enough to knock someone out. So then you shoot the opposing, you know, the occupying soldier in the back of the head. You take his, you know, his gun, his radio, his body armor. And then you just go get more. I'm not recommending that. But so anyway, Texas is the only state where you can shoot to kill over property. Do you guys know that?
No, I didn't know that.
No, I didn't. I know that most places, they don't permit protection of property and use of lethal force or violence. It's kind of like
for life.
You have to give up the goods, you know, kind of like dealing with the tax man.
Yeah, you have to, you know, you have to have your life threatened. But in Texas, at night, you can shoot people over criminal mischief on your property. That's like, you know, going through your garbage cans or spraying paint and graffiti or stuff. So I think, I'm not a lawyer, but my reading of this is that you probably could shoot a dog that's trying to eat one of your cats. I think you have to prove that the cat is yours, maybe. I mean, first of all, you can just shoot, shovel, and shut up. You know, no one would know. But second of all, you know, Texans love their guns. They love their private property. They love the right to self-defense. But they also love their dogs, man. So, you know, I would try to find a way to, like, fence them out or something. But if you can't afford that, why don't you read, Dan, the subsection D, protection of property, section 9.41 of the Texas gun law penal code here, please.
All labs matter.
Yeah, there you go.
A person in lawful possession of land or tangible movable property is justified in using force against another when and to the degree the actor reasonably believes the force is immediately necessary to prevent or terminate the other's trespass on the land or unlawful interference with the property.
Trespass? Like, you know, they always say, like, does that mean you can shoot little girls for picking daisies on the edge of your property? It sounds like it does to me. I'm not recommending it, but I think cats are movable, tangible property. You can see them and touch them and they move. All right, read on, please. Unless you have comments.
That's section A. Do you want section B as well?
Give me section B, lay it on me.
A person unlawfully dispossessed of land or tangible movable property. I'm not going to get through this before the
break goes. Go ahead.
By another is justified in using force against the other, and when to the degree the actor reasonably believes the force is immediately necessary to re-enter the land or recover the property if the actor uses the force immediately or in fresh pursuit after.
You know what we should do? We don't take calls, but we should give out someone else's home phone number. So yeah, call in if you have opinions on this.
These words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Now with bigger buttons. Hey, this is Lou, and I'm joined by Dan from Scotland.
Hello.
What's going on there?
Not a lot.
Okay.
I don't know. Everyone's obsessed with the refugee crisis just now, but that's a whole other thing.
Oh, well, let's chat about that later. So anyway, going back to last segment, talking about protection of property. You know, it's really interesting that in most places, it's actually prohibited to use violence or definitely lethal force for the purposes of protecting property. And strangely enough, in the places that have those prohibitions against actually defending your property, property is much less safe. It's kind of like the places that have, instead of stand your ground laws. Are you familiar with those, Dan?
Yeah, I'm familiar with them, yeah.
Okay. All right. So anyway, instead of having stand your ground laws, many people have, or many of the states have, the cower and hide under the desk laws, meaning you're not allowed to defend yourself. And strangely enough, those are the places, you know, like Chicago, that are, you know, really dangerous, and you have a lot more crime. But anyway, how are the laws in Scotland regarding protecting property?
Well, now, this is interesting because I'm not sure what remit this comes under anymore, because I remember laws were changed in England, because there was a time that, this was years ago, but it ended up being a big story. There was a farmer that had shot a guy who was burgling his house, and the farmer ended up in jail. And the guy was like, I remember he was like suing him or something. It was something weird like that. And it was, but you know, it seemed justified to most people. So I know that like there was changes to it, but still one of those things that it depends who you are and where you are. Do you know what I mean? Like, it depends how the police view it. You know, I think like if say some old lady stabbed an intruder or I stabbed an intruder, I think it would be viewed differently in both circumstances, if you know what I mean.
I wonder why that is.
I wonder why.
Because the action, what you're supposed to judge is the action, not the age or the gender or race of the person that committed it. Mm-hmm. And quite simply, what that means is, if it's okay for you to do something, it's also okay for me to do it. If it's bad for you to do something, it's bad for me to do it. Or if it's bad for me to, for you, either you or I, to do something, then it's definitely bad for cops to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. I don't know why there's, I think it's, well, I've seen it in other countries in Europe as well, this whole idea of, instead of like this whole do things for yourself, it's more of a go and find a state representative who, you know, like if something goes wrong, you phone the police. If there's something you don't like, then you write to your local council to change it. You know, it's instead of like getting together with people and do things for yourself, it's more of a mentality of find your state representative and they will point you in the right direction. You know, like I totally get that vibe here, man.
Okay, so if your house is being broken into, contact your state representative and they'll tell you how to deal with that, huh? Is that the case? I mean, it's people turning into domesticated house pets, or as you call it, state infantilization.
Yeah.
And it's really just unbelievable the nonsense that happens with that. Have they given any answers as to why there's restrictions on actually defending yourself and defending your property, and why you have to be a domesticated house pet? Has there been any Any justification of that or explanation?
When I hear things about this, it's always the usual kind of, it's the usual kind of thing of like, oh no, we have people for that. You don't have to get involved in things. It's quite patronizing in a lot of ways. Like, you know, you'll get people who maybe, oh, what was it? I'd remember I'd seen something on television. Oh, I think Lou's just departed from us. I believe he has. Assuming I'm still on the air, which I assume I am, I'll just continue what it was I was going to say. This happens to me way too much, actually. In terms of all the Freedom Fiends hosts, I think I'm the one that's been abandoned on the air probably the most. Because I think this is like time number four now, if I actually think about it. And the funny thing is, I always keep saying to myself, well, this will probably happen again, so I should really like write something funny. And I can sort of go with that. But then I always forget to do that. And then I think, nah, it won't happen again because these things don't happen to me that many times. But it appears that they do. So we were talking a little bit about self-defense.
Fiend I'll phone. Just talk, talk Fiend phone.
Say, oh, looks like Lou's back.
Hey, I'm back.
Lou, excellent.
I'm back and I missed just about everything you said, but you can reiterate to me in the break.
Lou, I was just stalling for time, that's all. I just noticed you dropped out. Don't worry about it. That's actually the fourth time that my host has dropped, the other host has dropped out, and I've been on the air myself, I think.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's absolutely a scary feeling, because I would rather eat glass than try and talk for 5 minutes. When you have something important to say and there's somebody else on there, 5 minutes goes really quickly. But when you have to fill 5 minutes and there's nobody else there to jump in, it is the longest 5 minutes of your lifetime. So a little behind the scenes action from radio for the listeners out there, in case you've wondered about the people that are able to keep yakking and yakking for 12 and a half minute segments like they're talking to the voices in their head. So, but well, anyway,
that's what I was saying when you were away. I was saying that, like, I always keep meaning to write something funny in case that ever happens again, but then I keep forgetting to actually write it.
So anyway, going back to the question, have the statics given any justification as to why everybody should be, you know, disarmed and domesticated house pets?
I think it's just an attitude here, and I can't really say where it comes from, because I've just kind of noticed it all the time I've been here. I suppose over the years the state here has, you know, it's increased in size. I mean, even under Margaret Thatcher, the state increased. You know, it was a myth that the size of the state shrunk under Thatcher. That was a complete myth.
Same with Reagan.
It's one of those things that, like, I just think it's been so ingrained now that, like, you know, it's this vibe of like, you shouldn't get involved in things that aren't your business. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we have police for that. You shouldn't be putting, it's always presented in this way of, you shouldn't put yourself in harm's way. We will get the police to do that for you. You should pull back, and, you know, this kind of thing. And it's, I don't know, I mean, I wouldn't say it's true everywhere, right? I wouldn't say everyone's like that, because, I mean, there are still people who have got common sense here. You know, there's still people that if you broke into their house, you would get what's coming to you, you know, regardless of the law, you know. So there is those people. It's just that I sometimes see this attitude, and I see it among a lot of young people I know, more of a kind of passive, let's just let someone else do it attitude. And I don't know, just for me personally, I think it's better to do things for yourself, you know, to actually get things done yourself instead of waiting for someone, you know.
Yeah, here the American conservative, which is essentially the bootlicking Tory loyalist of yesteryear, they always talk about, you know, our police protect us and all this other stuff, and they say things like, you know, If you don't like the cops, next time you're in trouble, call a crackhead. And then I'll post an article of a cop getting busted smoking crack on the job. But here's the cognitive dissonance of it, and here's where they get so backwards. This one guy recently told me, he says, well, if you don't like cops, go to the south side of Chicago, and after a half an hour, you'll be begging for a cop to protect you. Well, if cops protect me, then the south side of Chicago should be pretty darn safe. Unless, of course, there's never been a cop that's ever set foot in there. So they tell you the cops protect you, but then they also say that there's all these dangerous areas because the cops don't protect them. And the American conservative is quite like the American liberal. They're a bunch of chicken schumers that are afraid of their own shadows, and they need Big Daddy government to come in and protect them. Now, the one difference between the two is the liberal wants to go out and doesn't want to see any cops, and the conservative wants to go out and see a cop on every single corner, and they won't be happy until everybody is in jail.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's even like, you know, we're kind of talking about this attitude. I mean, it's even like here, I hear people who have maybe noise complaints against their neighbors, and instead of actually going round to their neighbor's door, chapping the door and having a conversation with them like adults, they go and phone the police to go round to their door for them, which just seems like, for a start, if I was making noise and my neighbor phoned the police instead of coming to the door to speak to me like an adult, then that would just make me angry at him. You know, I would just be like, why can't this guy just, if I'm a reasonable guy, if he came and said, look, you're making too much noise, I would turn it down, you know. And but that's becoming normal, like, well, from what I see with a lot of people, like that kind of, oh, we'll just get the police to do it instead of just, you know, actually talking to someone yourself.
You know, I think I may have commented on this on a recent show or maybe an interview that I was on, but if you look at it, the fact that people don't pay a price for each time they call the cops, you know, like, let's say the old biddy that constantly calls about people playing their radios loud after 6 p.m. and you know, demands that the cops go over there and tell them to shut it off, or even better, beat up that neighbor on her behalf. The reason that it works that way is because there's no cost per call. And it's essentially, you can use as much as they're willing to provide. So without that pricing mechanism, you know, you don't have, well, gee, do I really want to pay $20 to have my neighbor get yelled at, or could I do it myself? So if you look at the fact that the cops are owned and operated by their government, they're all government employees, and they're paid for by coercive taxation, the police are actually more socialistic than Obamacare. They always said it as private providers.
Yeah, that's interesting you put it that way as well, especially about like people paying for it, because you don't really think about it that way. But if people really knew how much all this nonsense was costing them, then I think they would have a very different view on it.
Well, one of the reasons I regard cops as useless parasites that really don't do anything except for generate revenue and collect taxes is I've had a couple of occasions where my old apartment was broken into, and they come out and they fill out a report and they say, you got insurance? And, you know, it goes from there, because the only thing they're going to do is do a report for insurance purposes. Mm-hmm. So I asked, so are you going to dust for prints? Are you going to do any type of investigating? And their answer was, no, they're not, you know, not enough property was stolen, not enough value in it. Now, had it been stuff that was worth more expensive, they would have said, well, the depreciation, you know, has brought it down, so we're not going to do it. So I mean, really, if they're not investigating, you know, what's the point in calling them in the first place? Other than to fill out paperwork, which any insurance adjuster could do. More Freedom Fiends coming up right after this.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
I think a couple of things just to mention. I've just realized, Lou, that we haven't said that Barack Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink in this hour. I'd also like to add from my point that David Cameron is a top hat wearing, socially inept, morally bankrupt, fun hating android. I just think it's important to mention that every hour, you know, just while we're here.
Oh,
for and God's also, sakes. Also, we're going to...
And don't forget, Barack Obama puts the executive branch. So,
It's so true.
Because I also have to slide that in. But anyway, go ahead.
You have to. It's important. We'll remember that. the weird thing is we're going to actually do something that never happens on The Fiends, and we're going to give out a number for calls, but you're not going to get live through on the air to Lou and I. It's going to go to Jim Jesus, one of our co-hosts, if you're not familiar with him. It's going to go to his voicemail, and he's going to answer your questions weeks later on his show. So just so we're clear, the number 424-666-1909. Will I do that one more time? 424-666-1909.
Why does Jim Jesus have 666 in his phone number?
I don't know, but I think it's a nice touch, to be honest.
Yeah, explain that, Jim. Explain that. Call into the show. Call into the show right now at 424-666-1909.
And explain yourself, sir.
Going back to the protection of property, there was a case down in Texas where armed assailants did a home invasion, and the first guy through the door got plugged and got killed. And I was actually surprised that the homeowner was not charged with murder. The homeowner was charged with murder, but he was not indicted. And that really surprises me because Texas, they're awful status about their cops getting killed. And this was what is called a no-knock raid, or dynamic entry, as the tactical guys like to call it. So anyway, they did a no-knock raid on this guy's house, or his mobile home, trailer, manufactured home, whatever you want to call it. And the first guy through the door got plugged, and he died. And then after the grand jury refused to indict the homeowner, the prosecutor says, "Well, we're still gonna prosecute him on that small, tiny amount of marijuana. We're gonna try and get the maximum extent that the law allows for it." And it's like, my God! But I found that it was really good that the grand jury was willing to acquit this guy on defending his property against armed assailants doing a home invasion in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely, because, I mean, that's the thing. What are you supposed to do? Like, if somebody breaks into your house in the middle of the night, I mean, that's the thing. But then you were mentioning a kind of bit before, like, sort of about, like, where do you sort of draw the line on this? You know, like, because then some people, when we talk about property rights, some people will start saying things like, oh, well, what if a little girl, like, skips onto your property, does that mean you can shoot her, you know, this kind of thing? But when people say stuff like
yes,
that,
it does. Yes, it does. But let me ask you this. How many people are going to actually do that? Seriously.
Exactly. It's too severe. It's like driving in a thumbtack with a jackhammer. It's too much, you know. Like, that's what I just say to people. I mean, how often is that going to happen? I mean, people assume that we take things to extremes just because we're talking about property rights. Think it's important.
Yeah, it is pure nonsense because, I mean, for the most part, you know, little girl goes skipping across the sidewalk or something like that, most people are going to smile and go, oh, that's so cute. And quite frankly, somebody that would go and kill a little girl for skipping across the sidewalk and maybe her sandal touches a blade of grass, first of all, a law's not going to stop that person from doing anything stupid. I mean, as Plato once said, good people don't need laws in order to behave, and bad people just ignore them. So, it's a great argument for stupidity and irrational possibilities, but come on, get a life.
Well said.
Thank you. And we'll be back with the second hour of Freedom Fiends right after this trip to the market.
Worms.
And the coffee maker. And the litter box. We'll be right back.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Is the Freedom Beans broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Feast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPer 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Beans, as you should know, is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. I'm Dan Green and I'm here with Lou Fien. Lou, how's it going?
Hey, hey, hey. And a happy belated Capital Day to all. Capital here in America, it's actually called Labor Day. But if it wasn't for capital investment, labor would probably be standing around with their thumbs on their hindsides. Sorry, not sorry. But anyway, and to celebrate this great holiday, the police in Tennessee have rolled out their annual no refusal DUI checkpoints for the holiday weekend. So it's great. They have a new I think it started last year, but anyway, starting on midnight August 29th and continuing until midnight on September 1st, no refusal enforcement. Those days don't sound right. That's not even Labor Day weekend. But anyway, yeah, the no refusal checkpoint is if you get pulled over and they demand that you take a breath, submit to a breathalyzer or a blood test, you can't refuse, and you'll be hauled off to jail and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, this is rather troubling, especially with the blood test. Now, normally you can refuse to take a breathalyzer, of which there's a separate charge of refusing to take a breathalyzer, and you'll have your license automatically suspended. I mean, the trial for that is just a formality. But with this enforcement here, yeah, the police state encroaches a little bit more.
That's crazy. I mean, I don't see a lot of kind of checkpoints like that here. I mean, sometimes maybe sort of going into the city centre in the mornings, you'll see police maybe pulling over certain cars who they suspect. But, I mean, here it's ridiculous, actually. The drink drive laws got put they got changed last year, so you can't even drink like a full pint of beer really and go and drive, or else you could be in danger of like getting arrested or whatever. And it's ridiculous because such a small amount of alcohol, it's like one of the lowest anywhere I think we've got, just in Scotland. And you know, it's always hidden behind the oh, we're saving lives and stuff. And I'm not saying people should drink drive. I'm saying that I don't think, you know, under normal circumstances, one pint of beer is really going to mess you up that much. It's just too much.
Right. And really, when you look at the drunk driving laws, particularly here in the USSA, it's a big giant revenue grab, because you're going to have several thousand dollars worth of fines. You're going to have to go through the court system. You're going to have to pay for an attorney. And then, like here in the state of Michigan, there's this thing called driver's responsibility. which means that you have to pay a fee to the state of Michigan, not just the court that you went through, but to the state of Michigan. And they break it up over 2 years, and that's another revenue grab. Now, realistically, if drunk driving was so horrible, then it seems like you wouldn't be able to buy forgiveness by paying a fine. Mm. Now, granted, for multiple offenses, they'll put you in jail, which means that the average person is going to have to pay the taxes of the incarceration. So when a criminal, and I'm using air quotes there, when a criminal is paying their debt to society, the tax cattle are actually the ones picking up the tab for it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, exactly. You know, and like, that's the thing. And what's so weird about that is, like, even like, say, guys I work with, you know, we'll see, you know, the police hanging about, you know, at certain places. They'll be hanging about, hiding behind bushes and things with speed guns. They do stuff like that. I'm sure they do with you as well. And, you know, and like, I'll be in van, in like my work van, with different guys, and they'll be saying to me, like, that's shocking. They're just trying to get money out of us and all that. But then, and then they complain as well when, you know, we get a bonus or something and, you know, the life gets taxed out of it, you know, and then when they get, then they complain about all of this stuff. But then when you try and, for some reason, when I try and take it one step further with them by saying, like, you know, maybe we shouldn't be, you know, having tax at all and things like that, then all of a sudden they go nuts and they go, oh, you can't do that. And then it's like, it's they seem to understand this in some intuitive level, but it's, for some reason, they can't get to the other step. I don't know why.
Where do you think the disconnect comes from? Because that's a worldwide phenomena. I was in the first hour, I was complaining about the conservative collectivists, who are just horrible Tory bootlickers, and they're constantly complaining about the cops, and you know, you could point out to them, you know, well, who's enforcing the gun laws in Chicago? Is Rahm Emanuel putting on his body armor, going out and confiscating guns, or making sure that people have their permits, or denying the permits themselves, or arresting people for not having a permit or for defending themselves? No, Rahm Emanuel's not doing that. It's the cops. And you pose a question to them in that manner, they'll say, well, Rahm Emanuel's a Democrat. Well, no kidding, he's a Democrat, but it's the cops that are enforcing his stuff. So, and for some reason, they just can't get past, you know, our saviors, the cops that will disarm us and throw us in a cage for defending ourselves, for exercising our right to keep and bear arms. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Hmm. And what you mean as well, it's like, I don't really understand. I mean, I suppose some people that are cops, maybe they tell themselves that they're doing a good thing. And I don't think necessarily everyone that's a cop is like a bad person. You know, I think maybe some people are just misled. But I remember seeing, it was like, right, take what you will of this, right? But it was like a protest in England a few years ago. And I think it was to do with like, it was something to do with public spending. It was either cuts or pay or something like that. But like, some of the people that were like, you know, on the barricades at the front, that were right in front of the police, were saying to them, you should be round here on our side, because you're just ordinary, sort of, when you think, like, when you strip it back, you're ordinary working people like us, but, you know, but you're defending them and they don't care about you. You know, like, how can you not see that you're standing on the complete wrong side of this? And it's a good point. And I think you'd probably need to lie to yourself a bit.
Oh, that is a very good point. And going back to the conservatives again, and the reason I rag on conservatives so much is because Democrats, liberals are just a completely lost cause. I'm hoping against hope that there's actually an opportunity to get the conservatives to quit being so communistic. But when it comes to the cops, you know, as I mentioned, they're the ones that are enforcing Obama's stuff and Jerry Brown's stuff and Rahm Emanuel's stuff. And you can call those guys Democrats all day long, but it's the cops following orders. And my personal feeling on this, well, first of all cops are bad, because they agree to enforce the laws. It doesn't matter how horrible, evil, cruel, stupid, or foolish those laws are, they agreed to enforce them. And by the way, that's a Robert Higgs quote. But here's the thing: if a cop can use discretion and say, you know what, I'm not gonna jam you up for this, doesn't that mean that the law is actually arbitrary?
That's
meaningless.
Actually. Yeah, I suppose it does, yeah, because then if they can give you a break on that, it means it can be bent, you know, so it's not rigid. It's up to their opinion, isn't it? Like, Yeah. I never really thought about it like that, but...
And I envision one of these conservatives talking to a cop about their constitutional rights to keep and bear arms, and the cop saying, you know what, yeah, that constitution's real nice, but I got a pension to think about, so shut up about your stupid rights.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's a, I don't know, it's a really odd thing. I mean, there was actually a time when, I've mentioned this before in the show, it's no big secret, there was a time before years ago, when I was a much younger man, and I was actually, I'd applied to join the police, and what happened was, like, I was to go for, like, a fitness test, and I showed up late, and it had already started, because I got lost, so then I kind of never pursued it after that, but I'm really glad I got lost that day, because I think if I hadn't got lost trying to find the training college, I wonder what would have happened, you know, it kind of worries me to think about that now, you know, like, 10 years later.
Well, you probably wouldn't be on this show.
I doubt it.
No, you'd probably be saying stuff like, give up that weed, it's for your safety.
See, the thing is, I like to think, but this is just me, you know, in my fantasies, but I like to think that maybe if I had have become a cop, I would have still realized it was all nonsense anyway, and I might have left. Like, I like to, and I might have blown the whistle on something. Probably not, though, but, you know, in my head, I like to think that's what might have happened. But I don't know, man, it was just, if I hadn't got lost that day, I don't really know what would have happened. I might be square now, you know.
Well, thank you for your lack of service. And realistically, I spent about 9 years in the military here, and I had absolutely no clue that my actions, you know, during that time would lead to 9/11, you know, blowback and all this other stuff. And I just absolutely had no concept of that. I even used the words on several occasions, I think the military is a great way for America to impose our will around the rest of the world. I mean, how creepy sounding is that now? Mm. But there are people out there that'll still say that. So, you know, and this whole thing about the cops, if it wasn't for cops, you know, the politicians aren't going to enforce their own stuff. So when you think of tyranny, think about cops, because they're the ones that make it possible. And, you know, there might be some cops out there that are good family people and all this other stuff. Okay, great. But it's a job. I regard the job of being a cop the same way that a pro-life conservative regards the job of an abortion provider.
Interesting.
So for the pro-life conservatives out there, can you name any good abortion providers? Would you defend the abortion provider saying, well, they're just doing their job?
I see what you mean. I do see what you mean. Like, when you think about it that way, if you think about it in a sort of mafia context, which is how we really should view the government, they're just the muscle. They're the goons, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, and you can hate on Obama all day for being a liar socialist and his feet stink, and he does put the executive and executive branch, but he's not the one pushing the button on that drone. That's somebody that's just following orders.
And isn't that drone thing really weird? I mean, I can't imagine sitting in a room somewhere playing what looks like a video game and actually killing people and then, like, putting on my coat and going home or whatever. Like, you know, that's just, I can't even remotely fathom what that's like, you know. I just don't understand. I mean, there must be some massive disconnect there.
I wonder if they walk out the door high-fiving each other saying, yeah, I got a new high score today.
Oh, I hope not.
But who knows? Maybe someday you can ask a cop in North Dakota of what it's like to get a new high score against citizens of the U.S.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Yeah. Freedom Fiends. Now with bigger buttons. Hey, this is Lou, and I'm joined by Dan.
Hello.
So, have you been following the stuff that's going on in Venezuela? And before we get into that, I do have a few more questions before we hit the meat and potatoes of it. But how closely have you been following it, and how much is it being covered over there in Scotland?
Well, I was kind of aware of some things, but to be honest, I've not really noticed it. I go on a lot of different news websites, but I've not really seen it getting that much traction here. Maybe a little bit, but not so much. You know, there's all these other things sort of going on just now. But, like, I've read a few articles there, and, like, I was absolutely shocked, man, because I honestly didn't... I mean, I'd seen, like, one or two wee articles, but I hadn't really read into it. I wasn't really aware of the extent to which that country is in really big trouble, man. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Oh, they're definitely feeling the burn already.
Oh, yeah.
But now, as far as Greece goes, there's not a lot of coverage on Greece in the mainstream media, and quite frankly, Venezuela's not getting a whole lot. I'm not hearing about stories being told on Fox News, CNN, and all these other mainstream media networks for television. Are you guys, first of all, do you get BBC in Scotland, and is the Greece situation being covered there, or the Venezuela?
See, I don't have broadcast television in the house. I'm one of those guys, but like, I do keep up like with the news online and stuff. The thing I've noticed as well is I was kind of looking recently for some more Greek stories because, I mean, there's another election coming up, you know, like Tsipras and the Syriza party called a snap election, and then his party split, and that I was looking for kind of more on that. But when I was looking recently, the most of the stuff I could find is, again, this refugee stuff, because there's so many refugees from like Syria, Iraq, and these kind of places landing on like landing actually in Greece and on like the islands like Lesbos and stuff like that. So that seems to be all the stories just now about that are about how they're swarmed with refugees. So now the kind of Greek story's getting sucked up into, you know, it's getting sucked up into the refugee story that's taking over everything. It's basically everything you find just now, and at least on like British mainstream newspapers.
Hmm. Now, do you go to some of the other non-English speaking newspapers or websites rather, and do like a translation on them?
I've done it with one or two websites. I haven't actually done it in a while. I did it before when I was a while ago. I was on another podcast, and we were talking about Greece specifically. It was one I did with the Libertarian Alliance, and I'd kind of done that there. I'd found like a few different websites and translated them, but it's been a while, to be honest. I haven't really had the time, you know.
Okay. I can get by in a couple languages and at the very least get the gist of what's being written, but I have done some translation on some articles, and to get the stuff that's just not available here, but and then some of them will report in multiple languages. But what we're going to talk about with Venezuela, and this is the current stuff in Venezuela, two articles. One is from the Telegraph and the other is from the Wall Street Journal, and there are major food shortages going on there right now. And the first one, Venezuelan farmers are ordered to hand over produce to the state. So what you have is just the shortages and rationings, you know, the stuff like in East Germany and Soviet Union and every other place that state socialism has been tried.
And, you can't even see it.
yeah. It's so disgusting. The words don't even pass my lips properly. But yeah, I mean, just because the results are infinitely replicable everywhere it's been tried, for some reason, they got to try it again. Like, nobody's ever tried it before. Hey, we found a new way to implement socialism. Oh, darn. We got starvation and shortages. So anyway, Venezuela's embattled government has taken the drastic step of forcing food producers to sell their produce to the state in a bid to counter the ever worsening shortages. Farmers and manufacturers who produce milk, pasta, oil, rice, sugar, and flour have been told to supply between 30% and 100% of their products to the state stores. It'll probably be a lot closer to 100%. That's not in the article. That's just my editorializing. Shortages, rationing, and queues outside supermarkets have become a way of life for Venezuelans as their isolated country battles against rigid currency controls and a shortage of U.S. dollars, making it difficult for Venezuelans to find imported goods. Pablo, Spanish name, president of the Venezuelan Food Industry Chamber, said that the order was illogical and damaging to Venezuelan consumers. And we'll pick up on this when we get back from this trip to the market, where, by the way, you don't have to wait in line and there is no rationing.
Yay!
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Yeah, Freedom Fiends. Hey, this is Lou, and I'm back with Dan. And you know who really needs to listen to Freedom Fiends? That would be the Venezuelan government, because they're screwing stuff up left and right. So, yeah, before the break, we were talking about how there's going to be new wage and price control. Well, there's actually wage and price controls that are already in effect in Venezuela. But I was talking about the shortages that are going on right now. And picking up where I left off, the guy from the food industry chamber says, taking products from the supermarkets and shops to hand them over to the state network doesn't help in any way. According to the article here, the state owns about 7,245 stores compared to the more than 113,000 in private hands. So something that needs to be corrected about what most people say about Venezuela is that it's not full state socialism there. It's more fascism. But if you look at the reasons that that they're having these shortages, there's complaints about hoarders and speculators. He pointed to statistics showing that 2/3 of hoarders, or bachaqueros, giant ants, as they're nicknamed in Venezuela, buy their goods from the state-owned chains to resell at a profit.
It's weird that.
Yeah.
I just found this. I love that. See the Bacacheros, or however you pronounce it. I love that name they kind of give to like hoarders and sort of smugglers, because it's like named after an ant that can carry many times its weight. I thought that was funny. That was a nice touch.
Yeah. Well, if you switch over to the Wall Street Journal article that I mentioned, they go into great detail on what's going on with this. And essentially what's happening is you have these artificially low prices of goods at the state-run stores because they're subsidized. And particularly along the Colombian border, which is a very long border, you have people there buying up all the supplies, and then they're selling the artificially low priced stuff at a giant profit across the border into Colombia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean, if you look at the law of economics, that when something is free or mostly free, people will demand more of it. And you can't be surprised when people say, hey, look, this costs next to nothing. So why don't I buy a bunch of it and sell it for, you know, next to something? And yeah, exactly. When I was stationed in Germany, and this is many, 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 many years ago, there were people that would go and buy cigarettes that were non-smokers, and they'd pay like between $5 and $7 a carton for them. And the cost for Germans to buy cigarettes at the German stores was about $35 a carton at the time. Now, this is back in the late 80s, early 90s. So they would go buy these cigarettes for, you know, $5-$7 a carton, and then sell them to the Germans for maybe 30, and people would pay their rent with cigarettes and whiskey. And the reason that there was such a price disparity is if you went to the commissary on the American base, there wasn't any taxes included in it. But if you went and bought it at, like, let's say, the Kaufhalle or a tobacco shop, then you're looking at all those German taxes. And back then, the value-added tax, the VAT, was only 14%. Now it's well over 20% in Germany. So I can only imagine what cigarettes are going for now. But
can't imagine.
Can you see the incentive to, oh, I don't know, pay your rent in cigarettes and whiskey?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, because there was one quote from someone in the government or something saying, like, oh, these people who are, like, selling stuff outside are traitors and stuff like that. And I see this kind of a lot when I've kind of read and talked to some people who are kind of socialist-y. They sort of, some of them, like, want to make everyone, they want everyone to modify their behavior to fit the mold. Like, you must, you know, it's like, your family might be really hungry and stuff, and you can just go across the border and make money. But no, you should just stick with the state. It's okay. Again, it's the don't do it for yourself thing. It's don't be a traitor, you know. You just stick in and follow the mode of behavior that we tell you is acceptable. And you can't manage people like that, because people are going to say, why should I bother with that? I can make money just now, you know, like, you might have a family or something like that. And I mean, I wouldn't be relying on the Venezuelan state to keep me going. I mean, from what I've read about it, they're the last people I'd be relying on. So it's not surprising that people do stuff like that. And who can blame them?
You're absolutely right. Economics runs off of incentives. And if you look at the idea of when something is profitable, people will move into that sector. And that's what's happening with these subsidized goods. You could buy the subsidized goods for next to nothing, and then you could sell them across the border, or you can hold on to them. And, you know, there's a lot of criticism against speculators. Well, speculators are the ones that buy up all kinds of vegetables during a very highly productive season, and those vegetables wind up getting canned. And hey, wow, maybe next season the harvest isn't quite as productive, and gee, it would sure be nice if we had cans of vegetables laying around that we could buy, because we don't have the fresh vegetables available. That's speculation. So, and also there were people that speculated of, hey, if we make this thing called the internet, you know, who knows, maybe it could be used for commerce. And the people that got on the internet and we were actually providing commerce were speculating that it would be profitable. So,
see, the bit that really scared me was, you, like, how they've actually installed fingerprint scanners in supermarkets to combat against hoarding, which, that's scary, man. That's really scary, dystopian stuff to me.
Now, I must have missed that part or forgot it, because I actually read this, the Wall Street Journal article a couple of days ago. But, and yeah, that is kind of Orwellian. Oh, my God, you have exceeded your ration of rice and beans for the month. Where's it all going? What do you mean you had family over?
But that's what I don't get still. I mean, like, even in Scotland, there's still, especially, like, there's a real wave of people who are very left-wing and very socialist. A lot of them are big fans of the Scottish National Party, and some are Socialist Party members. And even though there's this stuff that goes on, like, in Greece, you know, in Venezuela, I mean, maybe the Venezuela stuff doesn't get reported on as much here, but, like, since you know, Greece started having a crisis, which was, what, God, how many years ago was that now when we think back? You know, it's been reported on the news and stuff, and people can see it, but for some reason it's that whole it won't happen here thing, you know, which is just stupid, because it definitely could.
It could, it has, and it will. have you ever dealt with wage and price controls in your lifetime over in Scotland?
No, not okay. To my knowledge, not that I can ever think of.
All right, they've happened here in the USSA in my lifetime. I was a small child, so I had absolutely no concept of what was going on. And it wasn't full wage and price controls, I don't believe. But in the early 70s, under the Nixon administration, and by the way, Dick Cheney was a part of this, and I even heard him on an interview on a Detroit radio station bragging about his accomplishment during the wage and price controls of the 70s of the Nixon administration. But with wage and price controls, you must pay workers a certain wage, and you must charge a certain amount for a product. You can't charge more, you can't charge less. That plain and simply is wage and price controls. And because the pricing mechanism is what lets consumers, and then also employers, know whether they should purchase more of an item or purchase less of it. And as an example, if I go down to the grocery store and ribeye steak is at $1 a pound, and provided that it's not moldy and stinking up the place, you know, that lets me know that, hey, beef has become more affordable. Therefore, I can buy more beef. I can fill up my fridge and freezer. But by the same token, if it goes up to $20 a pound, that lets me know that I need to switch over to pork and chicken. It's real simple. But when you don't have the price actually reflecting a supply and demand, that's what distorts things, and that's how you get the shortages. Matter of fact, there's a joke. A guy goes into a butcher shop, and he sees that the price of beef is $2.99 a pound, and he says, hey, you know, there's wage and price controls. You can't charge that amount. You know, the guy across the street, his sign says 99 cents a pound. And the butcher says, well, go on over there and buy it from him then. And he says, well, the guy across the street is all out of beef. And he says, well, when I'm out of beef, the price is 99 cents a pound here, too. and these people just, they just can't get this through their thick heads. And the idea of a command economy does not work. And you can shout at the economy to produce more and to do all these things, but it doesn't happen like that. People are going to work in their own self-interest. So, yes, when you provide cheap goods, people are going to buy them and run them across the border. Or they're going to pay their rent in Germany with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. And I think I do kind of get this whole, I get the mentality, I think, in a way, because when I was kind of like, when I was quite lefty and I was a bit of a socialist, I was quite a socialist at one time, it was all because it was all emotion with me, like, and that's what it is, like, that's what I see all over the place, you know, it's like this whole idea of, man, we can just take care of everyone and doesn't we'll think about the price later, you know, like this sort of thing, and we'll just, and it sounds nice, like we're going to spend money on everyone and people will get stuff and we'll all have a higher standard of living, and it does sound really nice. That just the problem, it's like exactly what you're saying, it sounds great, but as soon as you get into the economics of the situation, then you see that actually maybe in the short term some people do get helped, but in the long term more people and future generations are going to suffer from it, and that's the problem. It's, you have to, people just want to, it's so easy. I mean, you try giving a speech about economics and most people will like fall asleep, but if you give an impassioned speech about the poor and we're going to help them and all that, then you'll get people all, you know, emotional and jumping up and down, and that's what it is. It's that fallacy, isn't it? It's just, that's what socialism really is. It's just the appeal to emotion for me.
Yeah, so what broke you out of your lefty socialist phase? I don't know if you and I have ever discussed this before.
Well, it's kind of a funny sort of thing, because I originally got into conspiracy theories. I never like totally believed it all. I just sort of found it interesting and weird. But then through like some of that stuff, I was on some websites that did some conspiracy stuff. And I've said this before, I first heard Walter Block on Red Ice Radio and I was horrified, man. I could not believe this guy was a real person. I was like, that's disgusting. And obviously, but then since now, we're at a point where I've interviewed Walter Block twice now. So it's funny how that turned around. But the first time I heard it, it was that way where it seemed wrong to me, but I could kind of see what he was saying. And then, like, I was like, that doesn't sound right, but he kind of is making sense there. And then that sort of grew as I thought about it.
The Freedom Fiends, a conspiracy theory to bring you to the truth.
Strange, isn't it, really?
And the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Freedom Fiends. Oh yeah. Hey, here's our final segment for tonight. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Dan. You know, a funny thing about state socialism is the philosophy of everybody goes down with the ship, not just the captain. you pointed out a very good quote in the last segment, talking about there was a quote from the National Guard General Manuel Gratterol. They're committing treason against our country, taking food and crossing the border. And
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, not only are there long lines, but there's also a lot of riots going on there. I think I saw somewhere in the article that there have been like 500 protests over food shortages during the first half of 2015, 56 looting incidents and dozens of attempted lootings at grocery stores, pharmacies, and warehouses. Even delivery trucks are frequently targeted. If people aren't outside protesting, they're outside standing in line for goods. So they have to protest and wait on line in shifts to do their thing. So, but here's something else that's really interesting. It appears that a National Guard armory or base or whatever they call it down there, and that might just be their police department. I'm not really that familiar with Venezuela. It got burned to the ground by protesters.
Yeah, so, was that the one that was after they'd seized a lot of food, basically, that they said was from like hoarders or smugglers?
Yeah.
And then they demanded it be, the people said, "We'll distribute it amongst us," and they refused. So then they ended up, the residents turned into an angry mob. And from what I read, not only sent the soldiers fleeing, but also they also even stripped the office for scrap metal, which I thought was funny.
Hey, recycling's good. Especially when it's a National Guard place. But and there are so many things that led to the cause of this, and you can't just blame one thing on it. It's like trying to boil water and call it soup. And there's a lot more ingredients to that. One of the things, aside from the central planning and control of the economy by government, which, by the way, if you're all excited about all those candidates in 2016 on how they're going to centrally plan and control the economy and make everything better, you're a socialist and you're going to wind up being Venezuelan. But one of the big problems is the major economy in Venezuela is oil. They really don't have anything that I know of that really jumps out quite as much as their oil does. And currently the oil prices are unbelievably low, so they're just getting their butts handed to them on the market. They don't have any backup. And one of my complaints about Michigan, and particularly the Detroit area, is the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan has banked on the auto industry for so darn long that when the auto industry was having all these problems, everybody was panicking because there was nothing else to fall back on. There's no diversification.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We kind of saw that a little bit when there was the Scottish independence referendum, because the sort of party that were behind the Yes campaign, the Scottish National Party, who are quite lefty, it was all about the oil, because, you know, there's oil off the North Sea here, and it was like, oh, we'll, and all these people I knew, they were like, we'll be rich, they didn't say we'll be rich, we'll be well off because of the oil money. And I was saying, do you think that the government are going to share all the oil money with you? And there's loads of countries where they have oil, but the people don't see it. And then actually, I'm not joking. More than one person said to me, no, that doesn't happen here. There's checks and balances in this country and there's rules. So that doesn't, I was like, how? Oh, man. Seriously? Like, people, adults sincerely believing that, you know, and then obviously the oil price crashed and things and what have you. But oh, unbelievable, man. But see, that's what I'm up against.
So it sounds
I was
like,
calling it the oil ferry at the time. Like, that's what it sounded like. The oil ferry's going to come and we'll all be rich.
I was just about to say, yeah, it sounds like Tooth Fairy economics there. or Santa Claus economics.
It's true, though. So, actually, continue though.
So if you're concerned about these things happening here, which is a very high likelihood, and when I say here, meaning the USSA, it's probably not a good idea to go down with the ship. It's probably a good idea to get on a lifeboat, start prepping, start working towards taking care of you and yours, and don't waste any time keeping that filthy beast alive. Declare your independence.
Nice.
Oh, and stash your stuff where it can't be confiscated.
Stop trusting the government. There are no checks and balances.
Yeah, they'll send you the check and then they'll take the balance out of your bank account. All right, thanks for listening, folks. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Worms!